You're listening to Face Off, episode 54, recorded January 24th, 2010. Welcome to Face Off, your face-to-face web technology podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Jade Robbins.
And I'm Mark Sanborn.
And in this podcast, we talk about various aspects of web technology, such as web development, social media, and web entrepreneurship. As always, you can view our show notes by going to faceoffshow.com, and we highly encourage everyone to do that.
Yes, we keep little timestamps of all little sections and you know, have links to all the goodies that we talk
about.
Lots
of goodies. Speaking of goodies, this episode is brought to you by our Geek Tool of the Week. And our Geek Tool this week is, so a little preface, right? I mean, VoIP, like Skype and stuff is everywhere. I mean, I guess I was a little late to the party. I never really used Skype much. I use things like I would voice chat with MSN Messenger or Google Talk, you know. But like it's out there now and it's very important to use it, I think. So to improve that experience when chatting with people, you need something like this, the Logitech Internet chat headset.
Yeah, there's nothing worse than trying to talk to somebody and they don't have headphones on or something and they're echoing and things. I see this a lot with people that are new to getting into like the Skype and VoIP stuff on the computer.
Totally. So this thing, it's really cheap.
$12.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, that little bit of difference that you have it all in one spot. You know, it has both the headphone and then the microphone plug-in, so you can just plug them in and chat. And it just helps your experience when you're chatting with people. You and I use Skype. We use it to record the show, but we also use it, I mean, to collaborate during the week when, you know, we're working on projects, working on Face Off stuff together. It really, I mean, richens. I mean, I like IMing, but it really, you know, creates a much more interactive environment for working, and it keeps me really productive, actually, because you know when I'm not working.
Yeah, I mean, for $12, you get a mic, a headset that's built in. You get the volume control, and you can turn your mic on and off with a switch. Yeah. So, I mean, they used
Yeah, I mean, it's just nice and cheap. It's good enough. Obviously, it's not, you know, professional quality audio, but definitely enough to help you out and make you sound pretty good.
All right, so should we move on to the web apps?
Yeah, so the first web app we were just playing around with, really excited about. It's a cool product. It's called Log Me In Express. So we were talking about this, what web app were we talking about?
ShowMeWhat'sWrong.com.
Yeah, ShowMeWhat'sWrong.com is great when someone knows what's wrong and they want to show it to you. But if you just need to do sort of interactive support, right now there's, you know, the options out there are kind of a pain. You know, there is LogMeIn, the regular LogMeIn, but you have to go in, you have to install it, or if you pay for their LogMeIn Rescue version, you get basically a lot of features that you get with LogMeIn Express, but some cooler stuff. It's faster, but you have to pay for it. Well, LogMeIn Express is great because you go to, you know, LogMeInExpress.com and you just say, you know, you just click share. Like, I want to share my screen. It downloads a little Windows executable. I think there's Windows.
It's like self-contained, too. There's no install.
Yeah, it doesn't install. It's just an executable that runs. I think there's Windows and Mac. I'm not sure. We'll have to look. But at least Windows, I know for sure. And that's, honestly, that's when you're doing most of your support in these days.
Yeah, totally.
And it's just an executable, self-contained, doesn't install. You click it, it pops up a little box with a share code at the top. And with this share code, you give that to the person that you want to either present to or the person who's helping you do support. So, I mean, this has dual purposes. It has support and if you just want to do desktop sharing for a presentation without having to pay for something or, you know, do all the audio, like if you're already talking over the phone. And then people go in and hit the put in the share code that you give them and hit view, and it pulls it up in Flash, shares your screen. And you can give control to all the people viewing.
All through the web. It's all web-based. It's great. And so, and the self-executable is only 877K. So it's like, it's not going to take a long time to download and install. I mean, within literally seconds of clicking the download button, they're going to be up and running. And then all you have to do, like you said, is just go to the website, put in the code, which is like, what, a 12-digit code or something.
Something, yeah.
And you hit view, and you're good to go.
Yeah.
And then, you know, that person, if they want to allow you control, they literally just click a little button.
Yeah. So let's say it's your grandma sharing the screen or something. You know, she doesn't know how to, like, you know, she doesn't want to have to tell you that whole code. There's, like, a button there that will copy the code to your clipboard.
Ooh, that's
or there's great. Also a button where you can click it, and it emails copies it into an email into your default email program. So, because, like we talked about last week, everyone knows how to email.
That is true.
So, you know, like the two good use cases, like I said, are doing support for someone that you don't want to have to go through the over phone install of a desktop sharing program. And then let's say you're also giving a web presentation and you can just give out people the address with the share code and they can all come on and you can do it over the phone if you already have, you know, phone conferencing software or something like that.
Yeah, and again, like I said, it's self-contained like EXE. That part, I really like that. I don't like to have installs of, you know, this. I really like that. And this is really simple.
And also it's free. Built-in chat and file transfer too.
Yeah, which this is the first time I've seen something like this free. I mean, we've seen go to my PC and some of these other ones, but
yeah, I mean, it is in beta. So again, it's in beta, so we don't know how stable it is. We played around with it; it seemed to work great. It was a little chunky, but I mean, that's to be expected. You know, sharing a desktop isn't exactly a trivial task for the internet, but yeah. It also, they could transfer this to sort of pay thing, but I don't know. It's a good sort of. Test case to show people what LogMeIn is capable of doing and how easily they can do stuff.
Definitely. The next time I'm going to do some tech support, I'm not doing it over the phone. I'm going to use this. I mean, I might use the phone for the audio part of it, but
yeah.
I'm going to use this.
Yeah, exactly.
This is great.
Because you can be on the phone and be like, hey, just go here and download this file and run it. That is LogMeIn Express. Really cool stuff. We were just playing with it. Pretty excited about it. The next one that we want to talk about is, this was submitted quite a while ago, actually, by a listener of ours called Cedric Weatherly, who's a good friend of ours. And it's called Friend Paste. So, I mean, we've talked about pasting applications before. We've talked about Pastebin. There's another one we talked about. I can't remember the name of it, but we also talked about Gist at GitHub, which has its own advantages.
And do your, yeah.
Exactly. Well, Friend
this
Paste.
One, by the way, this one can do that.
No way. Yeah,
it can.
That's cool. So, what I think the really big differentiator for me with Friend Paste, though, is the ability to, after you've pasted it, people can go in and comment on specific lines of code. Which this is very helpful for our topic, which later our topic is
code review.
So one of the cool things we were talking about, I was like, man, it's, you know, would be cool is if there was a web app out there that you could, you know, have your code, have someone review it, and they could comment on specific lines and not just comment on the whole code and say like at line 30, you know, this with this, you paste your code in, you hit submit, and then you can go in and click on a specific line number and leave a comment about it.
Yeah, this is actually my preferred, as of right now. I mean, I jump around and stuff because there's probably 100 different ones of these.
But yeah.
Like, right now, this is my preferred way of pasting. One of the things that I like about it is it's semi-private. Well, and you can make it totally private by adding in the privacy settings, you can say that you have to require a password to view it. But like, you know, Pastebin, everything is public by default.
Yeah.
And they don't have a password. And it shows up on like their home screen, which is, it's nice depending on what you're working on. But a lot of times I'm pasting stuff that's semi-private and I don't really want it just out there.
Yeah.
So I like that. And then, I mean, it supports a ton of programming languages. And then, like you said, the comment thing is just great. Like I just click on one of the lines and it pops up this box and I can say, hey, this line is probably not so good. Or,
yeah, maybe you should refactor this because blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, so this would be great for code review. You just throw it up here. You click on one of the numbers and start adding it. It forks. So see here, you can fork the paste.
Oh, okay.
So they added the revision control kind of thing.
But you still can't. I mean, the sort of key to Gist on GitHub is that you can clone it locally as a Git file. Yeah,
you might
file.
Not be able to actually like open Git and like have a...
But URL. The ability to fork via the web is nice because you could fork, make those refactoring changes for them, and then send them the link and say, here, this is the changes I made. I think this is how you should do it.
Yeah, it looks like it's their own built-in fork revision control system. It's not really a Git one, but yeah.
But again, if you're not... I mean, what if you're not using Git? What if, you don't want to use Gist for if you're not using GitHub?
Yeah. And I notice they're using Apache CouchDB, which is a NoSQL DB that we're going to probably talk about in a future episode.
Yeah, we're developing sort of a topic up for that. Going to try and find a good guest that knows their stuff that can set us straight. So, Friend Paste. Very cool. There's a lot of these out there, but this is the one that we've been using lately, and I really like its features. So thank you, Cedric, for the suggestion.
All right, so let's get into our topic.
Oh, wait a minute,
Wait a minute.
If I want to ask our listeners, if you have any news, follow-ups, or web applications that you want us to take a look at, go to faceoffshow.com/feedback and let us know. Like Cedric did, we appreciate that. So let's get into our topic, which is code review.
All right, code review. Okay, first of all, I mean, it's probably pretty evident what code review is. You're just going to kind of go through it and.
Yeah, but I mean, it's, reviewing other people's code. And it's a very broad statement, right? Reviewing code. I mean, what does that mean? I review my own code.
Right.
But peer review means someone else is going to be looking at your code in various different ways that we'll talk about. But I mean, the big question to me, and a lot of programmers, I think, sometimes resist code review because they say, why? Why do I need to do peer code review?
Well, you know, there's a lot of reasons, you know, ranging from trying to increase the performance of, you know, a particular software function, you know, trying to find memory leaks, security vulnerabilities, bugs, like just it doesn't work.
Yeah.
You know, one of the main arguments for it is that it's cheaper to fix a bug, especially depending on the application. It could be a lot cheaper to find a bug, you know, like Space Shuttle, for example, if it's going to... You know, have a problem when you're up in space is going to be super expensive to try to fix that versus finding it right away. You know, and usability issues, if you are creating like some kind of a domain specific language where you don't want to be changing function names or you're going to be breaking people's implementations. So there's lots of different reasons. Like you said, though, programmers tend to not like code reviews. And some of the reasons is, they find it kind of personal, like it's like a personal thing. Yeah, so some of the ways you can prevent that is like kind of give out your own code to start with to get everybody used to code review, especially if you're in an environment where you want to try to encourage code review, but you have a lot of resistance, which it tends to be a big resistance among programmers. Giving out your own code really helps because you know you're kind of saying, hey, it's okay, I'm
participating in the system, so
instead of just saying, "Here, give me your code, I want to look at it." another way to get people to do this is kind of tempt the programmer's ego by saying, "You know, I'm a perfect programmer. I dare you to find some faults in my thing." And it's interesting tactic.
So I mean, there's two parts of that. You kind of just hit on it. There is trying to encourage people to want to give out their code for review, and also trying to encourage people to review other people's code, because both is an issue. Like people, like you said, it's a personal thing. People don't really want to give out their code because they don't want to be scrutinized, but it's also a time thing. A lot of programmers don't want to do other people's code review because they feel like it's wasting their time and they should be out programming and not reviewing other people's code.
Mm-hmm. And I think the biggest way to really get over this hurdle is, and it could be however you want to attempt, you know, try to accomplish this, but is to convince them that it's not personal. I know it's going to probably be hard, but that is the number one hurdle for the reasons programmers don't want to do code review.
Yeah,
they think they kind of think that it's if you find something wrong with the code, it's like something wrong with them. It's like
a personal attack. Yeah, people tend to be very guarded about their code. They take ownership. You know, they wrote it; it's theirs. If you find something that you say is wrong with it, they take it personally. The one thing I do want to go back to, though, is why you need to do code review. And I think most programmers will do this. There's probably a couple really good ones where, you know, like amazing programs, you know, that this doesn't happen to. But I think it pretty much happens to everybody is when you're writing it and you're involved with it, it's so hard to find anything wrong with it, right? It all looks perfect to you. You thought about it and you thought about the solution that you want to implement. So that has to be the right way because you put a lot of time into thinking about it. And so you have to say... and I mean, this happens to me with writing all the time. I cannot be my own editor because the way I write it always sounds perfect in my head. And I'm the same way with code. The way I coded it seems perfect in my head. So, you know, I mean, we've all done this where, you know, we have a really bad problem. We can't figure it out. We've been working on it for like 2 days, can't figure it out. And you're like, all right, well, I guess I need another pair of eyes on it, right?
And they figure it out in 30 seconds.
30 seconds, right? Oh, you forgot your semicolon right here. Are you serious? And it's like that the code review is kind of like that principle, but taken to a formal level saying, you know, always have an extra set of eyes on your code because these sort of things are going to happen all the time.
Absolutely. So there's two main types of code review. There's the formal code review and then there's the lightweight code review. We'll start by the formal code review. You know, this is where you have a moderator that is not the author of the work at all. It's like a third party, kind of like you say, you know, like another set of eyes. But this is the person that's not really related to the project. They're just going to moderate to kind of keep it non-personal. You know, with formal code review, you usually start with a meeting and talk about what things you're going to try to go, you know, find. Usually you go through it through the code line by line.
Mm-hmm.
Inspections are, you know, they're really focused on trying to find the you know, detection of bugs. They're not focused on, well, how do we fix this or at all? Like they just, the more bug, it's kind of like, you know, getting red ink on when you get your report back.
The first draft or then return it back. Yeah,
exactly. Like the more red, the better because it's going to be improving everything, you know? And so they're looking for, they're really striving to find the most bugs they can get. The next thing that formal code, this is a big difference between formal code and lightweight code review, is that data is captured at the end of the sessions and carried on. So if they find common errors, they analyze that and they keep that data. So when the programmers are doing future assignments and things, they can kind of improve themselves. It's kind of like getting a report card. I know it kind of might seem personal, but at the same time, a lot of programmers, they did a study, Wagers, I think, if I'm pronouncing it right, in 2002 did a study where they found that programmers' productivity went up by 20%, and they typically had a decrease in overall project cost because the programmers were actually learning from some of their mistakes, or maybe they found a new method of doing something that they wouldn't have thought of, and it just makes them a better programmer.
Definitely.
And so one of the things I wanted to say was formal inspections catch about 60% of the bugs, and it has as high as about 70%. It has the highest rate of finding bugs yet. But one thing to keep in mind is it is expensive. You have to hold formal meetings. It is
a very formal
process. There's a lot of overhead.
Yeah. I mean, you have to hire people who are specifically, known as testers. You say these people These people are going to review the code. They, like you said, the whole point is they know nothing about the code. They have to really go through, read it line by line, understand the code, go through that whole learning process again, where some of the other ones we're going to talk about reduce sort of that overhead. So this does get the most bugs, but it also has a lot of overhead. Yeah, as well. Totally.
So the next one, if you're like, well, maybe we don't want to do the form one because of the too much overhead, or maybe you want to try another method, we've got the other type is lightweight code review. And there's a few different types of these. One of them is like the over-the-shoulder walkthrough. This is where the developer that actually wrote the code is sitting at the computer and somebody's behind him or to the side of him, and he's explaining his code, how he wrote it. Now, they found that this one can find about 20 to 40% of the bugs, but I was reading in one of the research papers that it was not very effective. Because like you said, the programmer knows how the program was written, and he just kind of say what he thinks about his program, and it doesn't really, like the other set of eyes, he knows how it's written, so he's not focused on finding really bugs.
Exactly. And either, like we said, it's like, I have a problem, can you come over and look at it? Or it's like, all right, well, I'm here for your code review, what do you have? And he's just gonna blow through it. He's just gonna say, this is the function that does this. Exactly. I kind of did it this way. And it'll find probably like big sort of algorithmic method, like process errors, but it's probably not gonna find small things in the code like, oh, you didn't catch, what if this variable is null? That'll throw an exception and the program will quit. You're not gonna find those with a lightweight code review. It's gonna be more like, oh, this is what I did, and this is, my code for that section. And you breeze over it, definitely.
Yeah, so, I mean, this is probably one of the fastest ways to code review, because you can, like you said, blow through it, and the other guy's just sitting there, okay, yeah, that makes sense, but it's also one of the least effective methods. The next one is the email pass around, which is, the way I understood it was, there's two different ways. You can automatically email the code out to, like, a mailing list or something, and somebody's, like, looking at it. Another way is to automatically send random chunks to random people on the project, and so they kind of get this email and they're assigned.
It's like a distributed sort of.
Yeah, it's kind of like, cool. You don't know who it's going to go to, and then they review it and then they add some changes or comments and it goes up, and it's kind of takes a personal.
That's really cool. That's a great idea, actually.
Another one that is really interesting is pair programming, and this is we've talked about this in episode 5, but it's basically where a developer, sits down on the computer and they both kind of take turns driving, they call it. One's going doing the typing, the other one's like looking at the code and thinking about it while the other one's typing. And they both collaborate on it, and they come up with one piece of code between the two of them. This one has about a 40 to 60% bug catching rate. And you're also, there's a lot of other side benefits. You're teaching the other programmer, or there's lots of that going on. And we're going to talk about pair programming in a minute in more detail, because it's one of the better ways to do it. And then the other one is a tool-assisted code review. There are tools that go and find code smells and different things that can help with.
Yeah, we talked about metric foo, which is a Ruby one to do it, and I've been playing around with that, and that's cool. It just sets good benchmarks. Like, I can look and see, like, oh man, we got some method that's like 60 lines long. That's probably kind of long. Maybe we should bust it up a little bit more. But yeah. Definitely. I think what we're going to continue talking about, I really like pair programming. I think that And again, this is sort of from experience. I actually have done this. We implemented it at work, sort of a mandatory pair programming schedule, which we can talk about sort of the pros and cons of that later. But I think pair programming is something that just on the business end, people have a really hard time seeing the benefit of it because they say, well, I got two programmers and one's writing code and the other's just sitting there, you know? And it's true, except for the fact that unless you're a programmer, you don't know. I mean, you know that you come up with little bugs all the time. Like, you know, I forgot my semicolon.
You spend 2 hours trying to figure it out, where if you had another person, it might be 5 minutes.
Yeah, they're totally going to catch those errors. And this happens all the time when I pair program, and it's great. It's like, oh, no, that variable, you misspelled it.
Totally.
And you're like, oh, and just even that is super beneficial. But then also the ability to discuss the process with people, which, you know, and it's not like a formal meeting where you have a bunch of people and you're really hammering it out. It's just, you know, you're having basically a small two-man meeting about this chunk of code that you're working on.
Yeah, you're kind of doing the review and the development at the same time.
Yeah, exactly. It's the review and the development at the same time. So, and I think, again, it helps too, because the person who is pair programming has a personal sense of the code as well. So, you know, they kind of get that ownership of trying to write good code, but at the same time, it's also someone else's. So, you know, they are able to catch each other's mistakes.
Yeah. And so, you know, again, this is 40 to 60% of the bugs that are getting caught, you know, and the best inspection gets about 70%. That's pretty good.
Yeah. And a lot less overhead to pair programming.
And that's just the code, finding bugs in the code. There's also other benefits to pair programming as well.
Totally.
Now, with pair programming, though, there's a lot of resistance to that sometimes as well, because it's like, well, I like to indent with this many spaces, or I like to use this IDE or whatever.
Yeah.
And there's can be some problems with it. Have you run into any issues yet?
Not terribly. Sometimes you tend to get over that pretty quick, especially when you're working with really, really good programmers. Sometimes they know just what battles to fight, and they're like, all right, well, that's stupid. Let's just go over that. But, you know, for the most part, I think some of these topics that we'll talk about are really the sort of big problems that you have to make sure you overcome with pair programming, such as one is avoid pairing people together. You know, don't force people to pair program, which is one of my criticisms with where I work, because there are obviously some times where pair programming just doesn't make sense. Like if I'm just doing really stupid busy work, it does not make sense for me to have to pair with someone, even if they're, you know, but at the same time, like maybe they're doing something cool that is really interesting that I should help them with. But sometimes it's like, you know, we have to get our pairing done, and it's like, okay, well, you get to sit here and watch me do stupid work.
It should be encouraged, not really forced on.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, we're really good about that. We can pair outside of our pair schedule, you know, if someone, you know, and that's great. And we've seen really good success with that. We've hammered out some really cool code. But sometimes when it's forced, it's like, and you can tell, you know, sometimes people just, you know, like 1 week I was just not feeling social. I just kind of wanted to put my head down and get my stuff done. And I was like, oh man, I have to pair. And I just was really not in the mood for it.
Yeah.
And it almost hurt productivity. Cause then like, I was like, oh, I got to find something for us to pair on, you know? And I was like, oh man, I got to hurry up, you know? And it just made me more stressed out. And in the end, it wasn't a good experience anyways.
And the other one I wanted to mention too is avoid pairing people with, you know, two new people, because, you know, like if programmers are resisting because they're not, I mean, because of white space, or they're afraid that they're going to think that their code is bad because of their thought process, because some of that is revealed when you're doing pair programming.
Yeah, no, it's sometimes.
But I think if you have an experienced pair programmer that has been doing it for a while, and you pair that person with a new person, that is a lot better than having two new people.
Yeah,
I mean,
well, like we've had on the show, Paul Levette. I work with Paul, and he is a really good teacher. So he is a great person to pair with, because even if, you know, I do something completely boneheaded, he's really good about being like, oh, no, well, we should probably do it this way. And he'll explain it to me. He never makes me feel stupid, you know. But then, if you don't have the right person, that can happen. They could be like, oh, what are you doing that? That was just stupid. You're, man, I can't believe you.
Yeah, it's kind of like leading by example. Like if you get two new people, they might tend to say, oh, why would you do that or something.
Yeah. Another one is avoid pairing people with really varying skill levels. you don't want someone who's a really, really advanced programmer pairing with someone who's doing really low level stuff, or the other way around, because then the other person just turns it to a watcher, you know, or they spend the entire time pairing the other person explaining what should be, you know, basics to that sort of functionality.
Yeah. You want to kind of match their pace. Like if somebody's, you know, really, really smart and just, you know, whipping out these things and the other guy's like, I can't keep up. All I do is sit here and watch. That doesn't really help.
Yeah, that then you are definitely wasting time. You have one person programming, the other person just sitting there. They're really not learning anything. It absolutely needs to be a collaborative process. We've even seen some things with we were playing around with so that one person isn't sitting back, and it kind of helps with the management situation. If you use something like Etherpad I think we use TextMate, but there's also like Eclipse plugins that do sort of real-time collaborative code things, so you can see the changes. And we use like Teleport for the Mac, so that like I could take over Paul's computer and be like, oh no, well, this is what I mean when I'm talking about how I want him to change the code, and I can just change it myself. And you're sort of switching that driver and that watcher as you go along.
Awesome. Another tool really for that too is Screen. Can actually do sharing. You could, if totally. You're using a console-based editor.
Teleport is just a fancy version of Screen that makes it really easy for the Mac. But again, like that's a great example where it's like, okay, well, you know, I can go in and do it. It really sort of looks a lot more collaborative too to managers, which is, it sounds stupid, but sometimes you want to make it, you also want to make it look like to them it's worth their while. So you really need to make it a collaborative process where you're really working together, talking about it a lot, and really getting involved.
Do you guys tend to assign certain code snippets to pair because you think it's easier?
No, what we usually do is so we have to pair twice a week, and the sort of schedule rotates. And so for those, we usually say like, oh, I have to pair with Paul. Like, hey, Paul, are you working on anything that would be good for pairing? And he would say, I'm doing kind of boring stuff now. What are you working on? And we would just talk about what we're working on right now and then decide which one we want to pair on.
I see.
But then there's other times where it's just like, you know, one guy's working on something. He's like, you know, hey, Robbie, come over here. I need your help. I need you to pair with me. And Robbie's like, okay, well, I'll come. And it works out really well.
Do you find that that's helped, increase your skill as a programmer?
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said, if you work with someone like Paul, he is amazing. I mean, it's just, he's super helpful. He's an amazing person to pair with. And we have some other people in the office. The best part about it is it really helps distribute the knowledge too, because we tend to do, you know, like, oh, you know, Paul is working on this chunk, so Paul is, you know, in charge of this. But when he pairs with someone, now that knowledge is distributed on how that works, where that is. You know, not only is that person reviewing the code, but they also, you know, if Paul, you know, we do the bus scenario, if Paul got hit by a bus the next day, that person could easily jump in on that code and maintain it.
That's a great point. That's a side benefit of doing it this way.
Yeah.
Which you don't get with the formal review.
Yeah,
that is absolutely an excellent point. Then the last thing I wanted to say was that the support pair program, you know, like for pair programming, if you set a coding standard, because I could see where two programmers could get together and they'd be like, and start arguing about how they should indent and things like that. I think if you have a coding standard, you'll just eliminate at least some of that stuff.
Yeah,
and you can focus on doing your actual programming.
Yeah, we have like a Ruby style guide. So I mean, when you first come to work, it's like, okay, here's a style guide. You know, it's soft tabs, right? Or I can't remember. They're actual space characters, not tab characters. Soft tabs, two character soft tabs. You know, put your brackets here, do this. And it's sort of the minutia, but it's like, you know, learn that code to that standard, and that's just the way it is. And I think most programmers that are really professionals and take it seriously, the coding standard doesn't really bother them. It's just sort of, you know, a different look at the same thing.
Sure.
You know, because like if you told me today that I had to put my curly braces on a new line for like an if, I could do that. It would
that
bug
was
me.
That's probably one of the ones that I am very religious about is that one. I can't handle it.
Yeah, but
I would
like,
get used to it.
Do this or, you know, you can't work here.
That's true.
Okay, I would do it.
Of course. Well, so some of the criticisms is that some of this stuff can be time consuming. Like you said, with pair programming, it's hard to convince management to do this because you're basically taking two programmers and they're working on the same thing instead of both working on something else. So how do you kind of get around
Well,
that?
Oftentimes too, another way to think about it is oftentimes development usually goes like development and then bug fixing afterwards. And pair programming kind of, or for code review of any sort, I guess, kind of mixes the two, especially pair programming. It mixes development and bug tracking at the same time because, you know, if you're pair programming, you're going to find a lot of those bugs as you're developing, which is going to reduce the amount of time you're going to have to do it later. But that's sort of a hard one, you know, because it looks like right now it looks like you have one half the productivity. You have one person programming, the other one not. But at the same time, that really is going to reduce the amount of time you're going to have to do fixing bugs later.
And you're going to reduce the time where you have 2 hours and you're trying to track down a bug, which with pair programming, you might catch the bug in 10 minutes. You snap some of that. It's hard to track that stuff, though.
It is. It is. It's one of those things, but you just, that's where you, hopefully you have a good manager that understands technology and understands the process. Because it's, I mean, it's funny. Software development is a whole different process. Sometimes we try to put like things like construction terminology and construction management onto this, but it's a different thing. It definitely is very different. But another, you know, it really, hopefully you have a good enough manager that you can explain that to and will understand it and trust your judgment to say, this is a good process.
Yeah. I think some of the other things that can help too is show some of these research papers that have come out that have said, you know, have done pretty extensive research on, you know, how many, what percentage of bugs are found, how much productivity it helps. Mm-hmm. Like you said, the distribution of knowledge, like if somebody gets hit by a bus or something, you have acknowledged working on that same amount of code that he did.
I mean, it's undeniable. I think there is so much evidence out there, and it sort of makes common sense that some sort of code review will reduce the number of bugs. And another way to think about it is the less bugs your software has when you release it, the better you look. Mm-hmm. It's not about productivity or how fast can we get the software out. But what about the fact that if you put software, you know, out there and people find bugs, yeah, you can fix the bugs. But it also makes you look bad too. If we've gotten to this sort of thing in software development today where it's like, oh, just get it out the door. I mean, we see this with video games all the time. Just get out the door. We'll do 12 patches in the next 2 months and fix everything, you know, and that's starting to wear thin on people. They're kind of tired of, you know, patching something every 2 seconds. I mean, Microsoft has to patch everything all the time. And I think it just makes you look a lot better. It makes you look more professional too. And I think that's also sort of a business strategy that you can explain to someone who might not understand software development. You know, okay, well, if you put a defective product out, you're not going to look as good. You look less professional. People don't trust you as much. You know, with code review, we can get less bugs out and our software looks better and runs better too.
Absolutely.
All right, well, that wraps it up for this episode of Face Off. I want to remind you guys that you can subscribe to the show if you're not already by going to faceoffshow.com/subscribe. We have lots of different ways that you can subscribe to the show. If you want to leave feedback for the show, go to faceoffshow.com/feedback. We'd love to hear from you guys. Thanks, and we'll see you next week.